Robopocalypse with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi and welcome to the 103rd episode of Robots. I am Jana and today we will be hearing from New York Times best-selling author Danielle Wilson, whose latest novel, Robopocalypse, tells the story of a small number of humans who are trying to find ways to survive after robots attack the human race. But first, here's Christine and the news.
Thank you. Last week, the Robots podcast had a chance to visit the world's biggest industrial fair, the Hannover Messe in Germany. In the midst of a flood of robotic automation, a new bionic hand by German industrial control and automation company Festo caught our attention. The ExoHand is an exoskeleton that can be worn by an operator like a glove. The fingers can be actively moved and the strength amplified. The operator's hand movements are registered and transmitted to the robotic hand in real time. This allows to increase the strength and endurance of human manipulation. The goal of the ExoHand is to extend human scope of action and to secure them an independent lifestyle even at an advanced age. In other news, California-based company PolyPlus has developed a battery that can exploit a reaction between lithium and seawater. The breakthrough was enabled by coating lithium with a solid ceramic membrane. The membrane allows lithium ions to pass through, but is impervious to liquids and gases. Unlike well-known lithium ion polymer, the first version of the new battery will be non-rechargeable. However, by relying on seawater, it can pack more than 3 times the watt-hours per kilogram of current lithium battery packs and more than 40 times that of lead-acid batteries. The company believes that the new battery will find a wide range of applications, from autonomous submarines to powering buoys and deep water sensors. It expects to set up a pilot production in the next 12 months. For more information on Festo's ExoHand and PolyPlus's new battery, visit our website at www.robotspodcast.com.
Author Danielle Wilson holds a PhD in robotics from Carnegie Mellon University, CMU, in Pittsburgh. And many of the robots in his novels are actually inspired by real robotics research. His latest novel, Robopocalypse, is just being adapted for the cinema by Steven Spielberg. Danielle spoke to our reporter Sabine about his PhD and his love for writing novels, giving us an update on the books he's published since we last spoke to him in 2007.
Hi, Daniel. Welcome to Robots.
Hi, Sabine.
It's great to have you back on this show, and I just wanted to start by having you introduce yourself to our listeners.
My name is Daniel H. Wilson, and I'm the author of several books, How to Survive a Robot Uprising and Robopocalypse, and a lot of other very appropriate books for this podcast.
You started off as a roboticist, actually. What did you work on?
I went to graduate school at Carnegie Mellon University, and my research was in, my thesis topic was assistive intelligent environments for automatic health monitoring. And so sort of the short version is that I spied on elderly people for their own good. And the long version is that I used low-cost, minimally invasive sensors to build models of where people are at and what they're doing so that I could monitor their functionality, whether they're able to do the activities of daily living.
And this led you to write a book in 2007 about how to survive a robot uprising that you mentioned before. It's a really funny book. I remember really laughing a lot while reading it. And since then, your career has really taken off. Did you always dream of becoming a novelist, or did it just happen?
I always wanted to be a novelist. I always loved reading science fiction, and, you know, like a lot of people, I always really enjoyed that. And as a kid, I wrote a lot of science fiction stories. that I sent off, and I wanted to do that for a living, but, you know, that didn't work out by the time I was 17, surprisingly. So I figured that, you know, science was the next best thing to science fiction, and I ended up going to school and starting to program computers, but then realizing that you could program computers to learn how to solve problems without having to solve the problem yourself. And once I realized that artificial intelligence and robotics were real fields of study where you could really do novel research and really build something, that was it for me. I knew that I had to study that as much as I could. And it was sort of a fluke that at the end of my PhD, I had this idea for How to Survive a Robot Uprising. I thought it would be really funny to make fun of all the robot uprising scenarios that you see in movies. And so I just went around and asked my professors. You know, I would ask the person who built humanoid robots how that they would escape from that, or the person who built autonomous vehicles, or whatever. You know, there were so many different researchers there to choose from. And it all kind of came together in this book. And the book did well. And so I said, well, you know, I'll just keep writing books until they won't pay me to do it anymore. And that was, that was 7 years ago. I think Robot Uprising came out in 2005 or 2006. So it's been a while now, and I've been at it.
What do you like writing about and why?
I like to write about our relationship with technology. I think that it is one of the most important topics that you can, or theme that you can cover. I mean, human beings don't exist without the technology. If we don't have tools, we die. You know, the very first human beings had tools. We have tools. Human beings in the future are going to have tools, and we always have this relationship with them. And I feel like we a lot of times have a love-hate relationship. We love everything our tools do for us, but we're really scared because we depend on them to survive. And so we have this really complicated, evolving relationship, and I believe that we have this higher trajectory as a species because the technology is all changing, you know, and getting more complex and more capable, and we change along with it. And so looking at that from every possible angle, from simple stuff like us versus our technology, you know, in a robot war, to more complicated topics like what happens when the technology comes into our bodies and we start to co-evolve with it physically. You know, all of that stuff is fascinating to me. And it's fascinating to me because it's relevant. I mean, I see this every day. I see the technology in our society, and there's always something new. And it always gives you something to think about.
So it's really the perspective of technology and society and ethics.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that we're kind of building this power. You know, we're always adding new technology because we always have some new problem to solve. You know, in the most basic case, there's always more people. So we have to figure out some new solution in order to keep everybody fed and give them enough shelter and space to live and breathe. And so we're constantly causing ourselves problems and then solving those problems with technology. And we're kind of building this building that's just going higher and higher, and it's rickety and it's thrown together, and it's the best we can do. And it's scary, you know, that the higher we get, the scarier it is. And so it creates great drama, you know, and it gives you a lot to write about.
So speaking of drama, your book Robopocalypse just came out in paperback. What is this book about?
So Robopocalypse tells the story of a disparate group of survivors worldwide as they deal with a near future in which our technology stops working and it starts trying to kill us. You know? So at a glance, you know, it really lives up to the title. It's Robopocalypse, robots in an apocalypse. But as you read the book, you know, it gets a little bit, well, it gets more complicated than that. You know, I really love robots, and I don't really believe that an artificial intelligence, if it got really smart, would necessarily care about humans that much. I always get annoyed when I'm reading or watching something and there's robots, and the robots either want to kill every single human or they want to become a human. And it's like they're obsessed with human beings because we're obsessed with ourselves and we're the ones writing all this fiction. So trying to look at it from the perspective of this AI, in the book, the villain, I guess you could say, is called Arcos. And this villain, this super intelligent AI, is definitely making life hard for humankind, but its goal is not to kill every single person. And so its goals are actually very complicated, and it's interesting as you get further in to realize what it's doing and what it's not doing. For instance, it's not dropping nuclear weapons or anything. This is a very lush apocalypse. As you go further, there's more and more life in this apocalypse. And, you know, for me, it was just interesting to take my background in robotics and try to spin it to get kind of something original and unique out of, you know, out of a theme that's been very well explored in the past.
When you create these robot characters, do you create them from the perspective of an engineer or from the perspective of a storyteller?
Well, all the machines that are in the book are, you know, they're there for they're there for the plot, you know, and the story is really about the characters and it's about the story. But I couldn't sleep at night if my robots were not realistic. So, you know, every robot that exists, for instance, when the robopocalypse occurs, those are all robots that I wrote the book in mostly in 2009 and 2010. And even since then, some of the stuff that's in the book has been released, you know, like Siri was not out when the book was being written. And yet that's something that people have. So I focused on really near-term technology, autonomous vehicles like the ones being developed at Google and at Carnegie Mellon and Stanford. You know, all of this stuff is stuff that we really have. These are all products that we've seen in prototype form. And so it's all very realistic. And I mean, hey, I know a lot about this stuff, so why not why not use what I know? I spent my sweet early 20s, you know, in the basement of Wien Hall at CMU, so I might as well put that knowledge to some use. And so that's what I tried to do in Robopocalypse.
Do you have a favorite robot from the book?
You know, I really like 902. He is a safety and pacification unit, so he's a humanoid robot designed to patrol the streets and record what's going on and try to identify who's walking around, and so that other algorithms can build patterns of where people are at and you know what they're doing and potentially if there's criminal activity. And he has this very specific goal, and the villain gives him sentience. And so the Arxos modifies a lot of humanoid robots and gives them human levels of intelligence. And so when poor 902 comes online, he's in this world where all the robots are hostile to him. All of the robots that have been designed by Arxos, and all the humans are very hostile to him because they shoot anything that's made of metal. And he's got to try to figure out his way in this really hostile world. And he has some advantages because he's got superhuman strength and speed. He's got a lot of what you get from good engineering. But everything's very confusing. So to tell the story from his perspective, while he sort of straddles these two worlds and straddles both sides of this war, was really interesting for me. And it was also my chance to try to convey to the reader how complicated human beings are. So 902 is looking at somebody and they're moving the meat around on their face, and he's thinking to himself, now, what does that mean? when the mammal bares its teeth at me, is that a good thing? You know, he's bothered just by the fact that human beings move around a lot, and they're always moving their arms and legs when it's needless. And so he has an interesting perspective, I think.
Would you say your book is more about technology or people?
The book is absolutely about people. Everything I write, all the novels I've written are completely about the characters. And you know, I don't find it very difficult to... I never really find myself slipping into too many details about the technology because you're always telling the story from the perspective of a character. And so if it's a 14-year-old girl who... you know, has just ended up in this situation, then she's not necessarily going to know all the military details about some autonomous tank or something that's wandering around the landscape. I mean, she's going to describe it from a very specific point of view, and things may be moving fast, you know, so there's not going to be a lot of details there. Now, the framework of how everything works and how the world works. You know, that's where a lot of research goes in. And even if I know the technical details, I don't necessarily have to, you know, convey them explicitly. It's just there and the way that events unfold.
Do you think robots are a good platform to convey messages or discussions about what it is to be human? Is that why robots are a good sort of sci-fi element?
Oh, absolutely. Well said. you know, I mean, I think any tool that we build is a reflection of ourselves in some way, whether it's a weapon or a tool that's going to be used for good or a tool that's going to be used for evil. And robots are really the personification of a tool that you know, you hold up a robot and you're holding up a mirror to yourself. And so, for instance, I think that's why a lot of singularity stories where machines become as smart or smarter than we are, a lot of those stories end with those machines trying to kill us. And, you know, in a lot of cases, I think that's just because we look at our own behavior and we're saying a lot about how much we trust each other and how we really feel about our own track record as human beings whenever the first thing that a sentient robot does is try to start killing us or start a war. So, you know, I think that absolutely robots look like humans, they think like humans, and in a lot of cases they are the medium that we use to paint out all of our fantasies about what humans could be.
Steven Spielberg is actually making a movie based on your book, so that must really be exciting. And I was wondering if you could tell us more about that and how you're involved in this process.
Sure. So there's a huge, there's a huge delta in terms of a huge derivative in terms of your level of excitement on the day before Steven Spielberg calls and wants to do a movie based on your book, and the day after. And the only way really to keep your head from exploding is just the glacial pace that Hollywood moves at. And so luckily you spread it out over a lot of time, and you have a little bit of time to come to terms with just how freaking cool and amazing that is. So, you know, DreamWorks optioned the rights to the book when I was 100 pages in. So I was in a situation where I actually was writing and they were waiting. And I knew that I had, you know, Spielberg waiting for these pages. And that's pretty intimidating, you know, to think about. But luckily I'm kind of too dumb to think about that stuff too much and too excited about robots, really. But in terms of the actual movie itself, I don't really have a lot of say. No surprise there. It's in good hands. I had some at the early juncture, I did a little bit of consulting on what some of the robots should look like and how they should behave and just how to make things realistic. But, you know, they were really drawing more on my robotics background than on, you know, my storytelling, because the movie's based on the book, and, you know, that was my opportunity to contribute.
When can we expect to see the movie?
The movie is scheduled to be released July 4th next summer. So it's going to be Independence Day in the United States, and it's supposed to be a big summer blockbuster. I'll be first in line.
Mm-hmm, definitely. So I just wanted to talk a bit on the impact of these type of movies and these books on the general public. For example, How to Survive a Robot Uprising was very light. People, I think, read it and laughed and didn't really see the robot uprising coming, but robo-apocalypse is much scarier, I think. And so I wonder, first of all, why the change in tone? And do you feel like books and movies like this can impact the view people have of robotics, or do you think it's just, you know, they know it's a science fiction movie?
No, you know, it's inextricable. Science fiction and science go hand in hand, and they absolutely affect each other. And that's definitely left me with kind of conflicted feelings, you know. So in Robopocalypse, one thing that happens are all the autonomous vehicles malfunction and start running people over. And this is one place where I feel really bad, actually, because I can't wait for autonomous vehicles to show up and help us stop killing each other on highways. We are not good at driving. We kill each other by the thousands, by the hundreds of thousands worldwide every year. And so you know, for people to come away from Robopocalypse thinking that it's some kind of cautionary tale or that I am literally afraid of robots for some reason, that just depresses me. And I hope that the movie doesn't contribute to that kind of thing either, you know, because I really love robots. I think every robot is a solution to a problem, and we have lots of problems and lots of places where robots can make our lives better. And, you know, I imagine most people listening to this also agree with me there. You know, robots are great. And, you know, that said, I do know that just from interviewing people for How to Survive a Robot Uprising, interviewing lots and lots of roboticists, people can be inspired to make great robots that are good for humanity. They can be inspired even by dystopian scenarios, you know. So you just might like the locomotion capabilities of a T-800 Terminator and decide you want to make a biped and not decide that you want it to, you know, murder people. So I think that whenever you see this stuff realized on screen and in books, whether the robots are doing good or evil, you can be inspired either way. And, you know, I'm trying to be more positive with what I'm writing in the future so that I don't kind of go down that path too much and become sort of a technological naysayer, which is not my intent. But at the end of the day, you know, human beings, we're interested in scary stuff. You know, we like, that's why they have Shark Week. You know, it's we like poisonous spiders and dinosaurs and dangerous things. It's just dramatic and interesting. And so at the end of the day, you know, describing these scenarios is just more fun for me because it's just cooler and more dramatic and interesting.
How do you stay tuned to what's happening in technology?
Well, I have got all of my friends from grad school who are all out there leading my alternate reality life and being roboticists and contributing to the next generation of technology that's coming out, you know. So one thing I do is I just keep up with my friends, you know, and they're doing amazing stuff. I mean, I think Mike Montemarlo is went out to Stanford and is building autonomous cars. I have a friend who drives the Mars rovers. I'm going to actually go down to LA and visit her and get a tour, you know, of JPL. That's going to be awesome. You know, so I just keep up with my friends, and I also just read a lot, you know, and I try to go out and visit the research facilities when I can. But, you know, at this point, it's been a few years since I've been working or doing research. So I really do have sort of a secondhand viewpoint on a lot of this. But luckily what happens is, you know, I can get the proceedings of AAAI or something, and I can read all the papers, and I don't have to work through the math. I can just read the juicy pieces and then pull out, you know, extrapolate from it whatever I want, and I don't have to actually understand the math, which is kind of nice. It lets you get through a lot more than whenever you're really doing research.
You have a lot going on right now. Tell us a bit about your current projects or future projects.
So my next book is coming out June 5th this summer, and it's called Amped. And it's not a sequel to Robopocalypse. And in fact, there's not a single robot in the book, which is something I kind of felt like I had to do. Otherwise, I'd only be writing about robot uprisings for the rest of my life, which is not necessarily a terrible thing, but just something I'd rather try to avoid if I can. So Amped is, again, kind of a techno thriller in the vein of Robopocalypse. It's a near future in which a civil rights movement has been sparked when people who have disabilities start using neural implants that make them smarter than regular people. And so this is kind of the day that you drop your kid off to class and you realize that every other kid in the class has been diagnosed with ADHD and now has this neural implant, and your kid is the dumbest. And you think to yourself, do I get her the implant or not, or, you know, should I even have to make this decision? And, you know, it's really thorny, complicated social issues that come from, you know, technology getting more and more complicated and capable. And it's exactly the kind of stuff I love to think about. So I'm really excited about it.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Daniel, for being here with us on Robots.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And that's the end of today's episode. We hope you enjoyed a visit to the world of robot sci-fi. If you would like to find out more, just visit robotspodcast.com. The next episode will be coming up in 2 weeks. Until then, goodbye. Robopocalypse with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.